And so I get into my very first yoga class. A friend convinced me to go, and reluctantly I went, and I got into pigeon on the right side towards the end of class. And all of a sudden I found that I'm tearing up. Not just tearing up, I was crying, because for 40 years of being angry, alcoholic, you know, my life, relationships were problematic. And then to get into that yoga class and feel that sense of relief, I was hooked.
Welcome to Guys Talking Yoga, a podcast created to help inspire other men to get in the practice of yoga by sharing its many benefits, physical, mental, spiritual, whatever you want to call them, through the conversations and stories with other guys. I'm your host, Derek Vanderwalker, and today's guest is Bill Brown. Bill's the executive director of the Prison Yoga Project, a very cool nonprofit that's been around since 2010, looking to bring yoga techniques and the practice of yoga to help with the disassociated mind-body connection that many people who are incarcerated endure by the trauma of their life experience. Anyhow, we get into some really cool stuff. And I got to tell you, Bill has his very own deep practice and a real passion for this stuff. And it comes out in this sort of introductory conversation for what these guys do. So I know you're going to enjoy it. So Bill Brown, good morning and thank you for joining us.
Yeah, good morning. It's my pleasure to be here.
So the Prison Yoga Project, I noticed you guys on Instagram a while back and been super fascinated and curious about your organization and the impact you're having in a unique community here in the U.S. Could you tell us a little bit about what is the Prison Yoga Project and how it got started and what is its mission?
Yeah. So Prison Yoga Project got started back in 2002 when our founder, James Fox, began to bring yoga and mindfulness practices into San Quentin State Prison here in California. He had been working with another organization, Insight Prison Project, doing social and emotional intelligence programs. And he recognized that a lot of the folks that were in his programs were having a hard time connecting with the emotions that they were feeling. And he recognized this as a disconnection from their bodies. You know, when folks have had traumatic experiences, as most people in prisons or jails have, it creates dissociation. And so it's very difficult for them to connect to sensations in their body, emotions in their body. So he started bringing in yoga as a practice. This was just on his own. But right around 2010, he wrote a book, Yoga, Path for Healing and Recovery, because he wanted to have something that he could give to the folks that were in his programs who were leaving. And he followed a model. There was another book. There is still another book called We're All Doing Time. And basically, it's distributed free of charge to anybody who writes to request a copy. So James decided to do this with the yoga book that he had. And it really caught on. And, you know, to date, I think it's more than 36,000 copies have been sent over the last 12 years or so, 13 years. Right around that same time, he began going around the U.S. and internationally to offer weekend workshops for mostly for in yoga studios. And so mostly yoga teachers, although the audience for those trainings was really diverse as well. But to encourage people to go into their community and start programs in their local jails and local prisons. And that's how I got involved in 2012. He came to San Diego, where I was living, did a workshop with my yoga teacher training that I was in at the time. And then I did the weekend workshop a couple months later. And within 6 months, I was inside R.J. Donovan State Prison teaching yoga classes.
Wow.
It's been quite a journey.
So I want to come back to your path in a moment.
Yeah.
So the Prison Yoga Project. So you guys are a 501c3. You guys go to prisons and other institutions, or predominantly prisons, or tell us a little bit about your sort of who you reach.
Yeah, our mission and vision, you know, we envision healing-centered approaches to crime, substance use, and mental health disorders. And our particular pathway is through yoga and embodied mindfulness practices. And what we're really seeking is like a cultural shift in how we address these social challenges, because right now the justice system is largely punitive. And so if we're talking about a crime where another person has suffered harm, the state punishes the offender by locking them away for, you know, decades in some cases. In the case of substance use and mental health disorders, oftentimes these are co-occurring with criminal cases where there's a more severe like felony type charge. But then what we see in jails is really just a lack of a social safety net for folks that have substance use disorder or mental health disorder, and they're cycling in and out of the jail system because there's not easy access to appropriate healthcare for those problems. And so we're looking for, you know, a different way, a different approach to dealing with these challenges. And we work not only in jails and prisons, but we also do work with some schools. We have people that are running programs just in community centers. We work with recovery centers, alternative court programs where people might be sentenced to, you know, something that is not jail, but more of a treatment program. Mm-hmm. And we're active in, I think it's 19 states now and 9 different countries. We have more than 120 active programs. So it's a pretty big reach. And actually, some of our international programs are some of our strongest. We've got partners in Australia that are absolutely killing it down there.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So let me back up a little bit. So
yeah.
In the beginning, I imagine it was James and a few other colleagues going into yoga prisons and jails with a yoga mat under the arm and literally just bringing this practice, you know, one place at a time. Tell us a little bit about how that got started and scaled. And then also, how did you guys get to the point of, hey, for this really to make an impact, we have to create a training program and a certification program to empower more people to do this good work, not just us.
Yeah, you know, and that's thanks for bringing that up, because this is one of the things that's really important to understand. You know, when we're going into these environments and we're working with this particular population, oftentimes we're, you know, well, two things. We're encountering, you know, a bureaucratic system that is really unique. We're also working with a group of people who have suffered some of the, especially if we're talking prisons, some of the most horrific childhood traumas that you can imagine. And so in order to make sure that we're having the greatest impact and being of benefit rather than potentially causing harm, we think it's really important that people go in with eyes wide open and with the skills that are necessary to do this work effectively. So this was, you know, an insight that James had, in addition to wanting to really inspire people to go out and start to bring yoga into their local community, you know, incarceration centers. You know, this is what the training was there to do, to inspire people to do this work, but then also to share the 10 years of experience that he'd accumulated at that time in going in and working inside, because it is a very unique environment. And it's not work that really, you know, it takes a special kind of person to A, want to go in, and mm-hmm. then to be able to work in that scenario where you're able to be most effective, which means offering a therapeutic approach to yoga and also being able to maintain really strong professional boundaries.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So I got to imagine it's probably an individual who, like, as you sort of noted, understands a bit what they're walking into and some of the energy in there, some of the personal trauma and stories that our people carry in their bodies and in their relationships, especially to each other, but also new people who come from outside.
Yeah.
The idea of the challenge of probably figuring out how to connect with these folks on a level that, you know, meets the room, meets everyone in the room in a way where you're not just speaking to one individual or perhaps the person in the back row, the front row. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's always challenging any yoga class or yoga experience, is how do you teach to sort of the most common denominator? So you bring everyone along.
Yeah.
but also perhaps the challenge of just being comfortable within your own self as a facilitator.
Yeah.
In that, you know, you're doing this for good reasons, you know your stuff, and there's going to be an awkwardness and a bit of a relationship building in real time, right?
Yeah. And that's really important. You know, the relationship is the foundation of everything that we do. And if there isn't a trusting relationship between the participants in the program and our facilitators, then it's just not going to work. You know, we're not going to get into the territory where we're starting to move beyond interpersonal impacts of trauma, which is what we're really trying to get to, is repairing a relationship of trust and allowing people to have the space to feel comfortable in their bodies and to be able to relax and hit that state where their body can start to release and process some of what it might be holding. And so, yeah, coming into a room in a way that you're comfortable in your own body so that the processes of co-regulation can start to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, oftentimes people talk about self-regulation, but really the process starts is if we're in a group setting with being able to sense how comfortable the people around us are. If the people around us are uncomfortable, or if the person who's in charge is uncomfortable, then that's going to communicate out to the group, and they're not going to be able to hit that state of relaxation. The other aspect that you bring up there is really important too, because I go into a room and I might have somebody who physically could handstand in the middle of the room with no support. And then I've also got people who are literally in wheelchairs or walkers and unable to transition from sitting to standing or to go down on a mat and get back up. And so how do you offer something that's going to be relevant for everybody? And I think it gets a little bit to the approach that we take. You know, we're really using asana as a way for people to be able to get into their body. So as a way of generating sensation that they're able to use an embodied mindfulness to take hold of. Mm-hmm. That mindfulness aspect is crucial, being able to drop into the present moment through the focus of being aware of the sensations that are happening inside, and then also just remaining connected into the environment as well.
So a typical class, and I realize there's probably no such thing in your world as a typical class for many reasons, but also partially what you just laid out is that some people have adaptive challenges that they come into the room with. But assuming that most of the room doesn't have perhaps some of those adaptive challenges, if you got a room full of a dozen guys who are in this community and they're new to yoga, your group, I imagine, provides yoga mats, or your sponsors or sort of supporters do.
Yeah.
Is it a matter of getting these guys to just start with how they feel with their bodies just lying on the floor? Is it a little bit more of getting them into a typical sun salutation flow? I mean, how do you guys approach this stuff in getting these guys to actually like try to connect and find to work through some of that disassociation?
Yeah. Good question. We like to start off with movement, actually. Generally, find that it's easiest to do so. And one of the things that I like to say is, you know, when we're practicing mindfulness, you know, if we're just like, say, focusing on our breath, it might be a really difficult set of sensations to grasp. But if you're in a chair pose and you're holding a challenging pose like chair, you're going to generate some sensations that are pretty difficult to ignore. In fact, beyond being difficult to just simply pay attention to, it's hard to ignore them. And so this gives us an opportunity for people to really start to feel that. We're moving into a position where we're actually invoking a stress response from our bodies. And so we're simulating the type of increasing heart rate and muscular tension and everything that might be experienced if you were having a stress reaction outside of that. And then we'll give our participants an opportunity to choose when it's enough. So we do a thing, notice all that comes along with that in terms of the sensations and maybe the thoughts that it's generating for us. and then take a moment, you know, when it feels right to you and disengage from the pose, and then pay attention to the process of your body slowing down and re-regulating. And by practicing that over and over and over, and we alternate between challenge and neutral or ease throughout the practice so that we're creating greater flexibility in the nervous system. Folks with trauma, it's like, you know, nervous system is stuck on the whole time.
Right. Exactly. It's a hyper vigilant, always in the defensive mode, just waiting for the next shot on goal. Right.
Yeah.
So I, you know, in hearing you explain that, I think about all of the guys that I've tried to nudge or suggest get into yoga, or at least the guys that I've talked to, and when what's your experience of your first couple of classes? And a lot of them will say, number one, like, it's hard. It's not easy, or my legs are tight, or my back's tight. And those sensations and those feelings is really where you start from. It's not necessarily like, oh, I can't touch my toes, I'm doing this wrong.
Yeah.
The fact that you're paying attention to the fact that what you feel in your hammies or your back, when you try to touch your toes, and notice that resistance and that maybe that limitation. And that might seem like you're not doing it right, like you didn't quite hit the four iron right down the fairway. But the reality is that that discomfort and that limitation is really the edge where you're starting from.
Yeah, and it really brings up, you know, the some challenge that I have with the way yoga is approached just in you know, a Western context or in through studios, and the emphasis on the physical aspect of it. And this has happened through a number of different lineages where, you know, it's hard to get away from the idea of like an ideal in terms of like, this is what this pose should look like. And really the ideal in yoga is to be fully present and aware in the present moment. And able to make a choice from a place of spontaneity rather than acting from a habitual or an instinctual perspective. And we're creating a situation when we're doing a yoga practice together where we're narrowing the context. Life can be pretty chaotic when you're moving about through your day. Mm-hmm. But when you're in a yoga practice, you're working in a special mode. You're focusing on a narrower set of circumstances or stimulus or whatnot so that you can practice that awareness and that presence. And by going to that space regularly, you know, with devotion over a long period of time, you build up a presence and awareness that carries over into your everyday life. And so, you know, the idea of, you know, a perfect warrior one or perfect tree pose or something like this is, I remember being in a studio yoga class and I'm the only guy in the room, as so often was the case, and they're doing a king pigeon, you know, and the teacher literally says to me, she goes, well, Bill, this is for the girls. This isn't for you. And it's like, yeah, of course, I'm never going to be able to reach back and grab my toe, you know, in that kind of a position. And as though reaching back and grabbing your toe was what that was all about. And I think that this is a real big shift for us, that it literally is whatever you're doing. I mean, we're all in a posture always. Yep. Our bodies are always positioned in a particular way. I'm sitting in a chair. I've got one leg folded underneath the other, and I can feel my other foot on the floor. And I can connect into those sensations, and I can connect into the sensation of my posture sitting upright and my hands resting in my lap, and all of those things are present for us always. And being able to remain connected to that, because all of that happens in the present moment. All of that embodied input happens in the present moment. And so if I can stay connected to that, then I'm connected into the present moment. I'm not worrying about the future. I'm not stuck in the past.
Yeah. You know, well said. Well said. So it sounds like, to go back a little bit, And just hearing you talk about how you start with movement with these guys and have them get used to that, the discomfort of awkward pose or of chair pose chair pose or awkward pose, actually.
Awkward pose, fierce pose. Right there,
all of those ones create sensations. You know, it sounds like a much slower experience too. I know one of my personal frustrations with most yoga studios is that when they have a vinyasa flow class, it's really geared towards a practitioner who's coming in, who's been there many times before, who sees this more as a kind of a heart rate, pick me up, kind of stretch out the body around the horn. And I think if you're particularly a guy new to yoga, a guy with some, let's say some years and stripes on you, and you've got some injuries or things that have kind of held you back, those classes move too fast and you miss out on all of that stuff that you were just speaking to about finding your edge and paying attention, because a lot of times by the time you get into, you know, up dog after being in down dog, now they're back in down dog when you're an up dog, and then next they're moving on to plank. And I think, you really lose a lot of people who probably need to get into yoga because they figure that they're not good enough or can't keep up. And I think I try to remind people that you just catch it on the next cycle. Like if they're coming around to doing down dog and up dog again, like you just catch it on the next turn and do what you work on what you need to. So it sounds like you guys really spend a lot of time with tempo in a way that's constructive and accessible for this community.
Yeah, absolutely. Typically in our practices, in an hour long practice, I think we're going to do about half as many asana as you would do in vinyasa yoga practice. There is a lot of attention given to spending time in the pose in order to be able to have an opportunity to connect with those sensations. And then of course, in between a pose, you know, moving into a neutral state so that we can see, you know, what does it feel like? We were just in a challenging pose. What does it feel like to be in a neutral state? And it takes about 90 seconds, you know, when you, after a stressor, for your body to process all of the neurotransmitters and hormones that invoke the stress response. So spending that 90 seconds to really observe, what does it feel like as your body shifts from sympathetic activation and into a parasympathetic state? And so giving good long pause in between poses is crucial. We do a plank often near the beginning of class, and we'll hold it for up to a minute. And everybody always has the option to come down to your knees. I always cue right at the beginning, we're all going to meet on our bellies. So you're welcome to exit this pose whenever it feels right for you. And then after we get through the full minute and come down into like a crocodile pose, just resting, see if you can allow the floor beneath you to do all the work now. So just as much effort as you were putting into holding the plank, see if you can give as much attention to being at ease in this pose and notice how your body begins to slow down as you do that. And so, those periods, which isn't to say that we don't do vinyasa type sequences, because it's really also very crucial to, in a trauma-informed approach, to create a sense of rhythm and a sense of flow and connection. Moving with the breath is really, really beneficial and restorative. And so, you know, whether it's a sun salutation, and usually I lean towards a standing sun salutation, don't go through the full, cobra, up dog, down dog part of it, but we'll stick with the standing. We've got a routine that I like to use where we're moving into and out of Warrior One. We'll come in halfway three times, moving with the breath three times to full extension, and then we'll hold for a while. I also find that there's, we'll do a, I think some people refer to it as like a dancing warrior series, where you're in a warrior two and extended side angle, reverse warrior, back to warrior two, and flowing with the breath. And we'll go through that like four or five times, which can be a pretty challenging thing, moving with the breath. But it allows people, I really encourage people to play with it. Play with the, flow in the way that you're moving your arms, almost make it feel like a Tai Chi, kind of experience.
Yep. Some rhythm, right? Their own rhythm.
So it can be very challenging at the same time, you're still giving that opportunity for the observation, and to be, really present to yourself.
Yeah. One of the things that when I was doing my teacher training with, Allison West in New York, it was my 200-hour training back in late, 2017. And, when we were doing sort of holding poses, I would be breathing very hard because I was used to my high school bench pressing days where I'd be on the bench press with a 45 or two on each side, maybe a couple nickels or dimes on there as well. And you literally you ceased breathing and pressing up for those one last two big, especially if you're doing a pyramid, like 10 reps, 8 reps, 6 reps, 4-2. You ceased breathing just to push it out. And you'd had a guy or two telling me, I got this, you got this, you got the, and you're, there's all of that. And I had to kind of unwind that in teacher training. I had she was like, soften your breath, Derek, soften your breath. And now when I find myself in a yoga pose, whether it's just my home practice or whether it's in a friend's studio, to really try to find that place of ease and sort of challenge. It's, breathing, it's enough of a challenge. So you're very connected to your breath, but at the same time, you're not breathing so hard that you know that you're stressing your nervous system. And I think, it takes a little time to find that edge, but really if you're talking about like remapping the nervous system, that's where you play. And I got to imagine for you guys, that's a huge part probably of the overall trying to reassociate the mind and the body and get over that disassociation.
Yeah. And, I think this is one of the things that, I was speaking to culturally, there is that, we're encouraged to push and we're encouraged to strive and we're encouraged to, go beyond. And really, in the practice that we promote, James calls it effortless effort. Can you find that place where it's just enough to hold yourself in the pose? And it's going to be challenging. I mean, if you're in a warrior two, you're working all your big muscle groups, right? But can you be in that pose that is challenging in a way that's not striving?
Yep.
And putting you beyond your window of capacity to hold that stress. So if you're huffing and puffing, or if you find that you're like clenching and holding your breath, then what we're doing is not being able to face a stressful situation in a relaxed way. And I think that's the benefit that we get when we are able to find that sweet spot, is that we can train our nervous system to be in a place where we're experiencing something stressful, but our mind remains calm.
Yeah.
Because our bodies were engineered for a physical response to stressors, fight, flight. We also have oftentimes in prison, the other one that comes up is appease quite a bit, or freeze. But sticking with fight, flight, if you are always using that physical reaction, it's usually not the most appropriate path to resolving a stressful situation.
Yeah.
And so if we can retrain our nervous system in order to manage that physical response to stressors, then our cognitive minds stay engaged, and the parts of our brains that are connected to social engagement stay engaged, and we're able to remain in relationship, resolve a conflict or a stressful situation in a peaceful and appropriate way. And literally over time, as we practice, we're diminishing the number of connections and the size of the amygdala. Through practicing mindfulness, we are increasing the number of synaptic connections and the size of our mid prefrontal cortex. So we're literally rewiring the brain in order to be more calm and stay engaged socially when we're experiencing stressful situations, which is, undoing the harmful impact of, usually childhood trauma where the brain's been wired the opposite way. It's been wired to be more reactive or wired to be self-defensive.
Yeah.
We're letting go of that. And I think when we let go of that, what starts to just happen naturally is you start to develop a much more compassionate and empathetic perspective on the world, which is sort of the, I think Patavi Joyce was the one who said, you know, do your practice and all is coming. And I really do believe in that, that if you do these practices, if you do the physical part of practicing asana and pranayama along with, you know, the mindfulness limbs, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, samadhi, right? That all of it ultimately leads us to be kinder and more compassionate people who navigate our relationships in a more skillful way.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it's probably easy for folks who haven't had this experience to kind of glaze over a little bit and thinking about these concepts as being somewhat abstract or philosophical. Mm-hmm. But if anyone's ever dealt with dealing with stress in their body, and maybe they haven't had the traumatic childhood that some of these people have had, whether you realize it or not, as you age, like the stress is just building. And one thing, one of the goals of this conversation and this podcast is trying to connect the fact that many guys who are out there who are have at glance a pretty normal basic life. They and their wife or their partner both have jobs. Some one commutes, what doesn't commute. Maybe they have kids. Yeah. Maybe their parents are aging or dying. Their careers might be kind of coming to a slower end than they would like to. They don't quite get to the gym. They're not making the best food choices. Like it just starts to pile up as this existential stress and, their amygdala might not be as, hypervigilant as somebody who's, you know, served overseas or who've been through some kind of child abuse or who have spent time in prison, but biologically the body is reacting to that stress in the same way. And so in some ways it's kind of a hidden process that's happening for a lot of guys. And so, you know, there's some real truth to the merits and the benefits and what is possible in this practice. And it doesn't have to be, as you guys know, doesn't have to be a headstand. It doesn't have to be a 4-minute plank, you know, like it literally can start with just really realizing I'm not feeling great. I got to check in with going on my body and my mind, even if it's just 10 minutes before I grab the 7:05 train.
Finding a way to integrate it in your life in a way that allows you to practice it daily and maybe more than once daily, you know, to bring it out of the studio and out of the idea that it's like this 1 hour time that I even need a yoga mat in order to be practicing yoga. These are some things that I think it would be really helpful for us socially to break down in terms of these practices. It's like to do the 10 minutes, you know, before you get into your day that allows you to be at your best throughout the day, or to be able to recognize, wow, I was just in a stressful meeting. I'm going to go and, you know, maybe go into the storeroom and put my hands up against the wall and press against the wall as hard as I can, tense up those muscles in my arms because, you know, Steve was being a jerk in the meeting, you know, and I wanted to punch Steve because I'm a human being and it's not appropriate in a corporate context to do so, but my body has that energy now and I got to get rid of it.
Yep.
And constantly shedding that stress, you know, consciously shedding that stress in a healthy way, ultimately, improves so many different aspects in our lives, you know. And that was, you know, prior to being introduced to yoga, I did have childhood trauma that was related to a medical complication that was disrupting my nervous system pretty significantly. But I was also working in large corporate environments in IT departments with project deadlines and, managers making decisions that were making my life really challenging.
By the way, let's go there, because I know I wanted to talk to you about how you got into yoga and how you got connected with the Prison Yoga Project.
Yeah. So I was 41 when I went into my first yoga practice. I had all of the usual excuses. I'm too old. I'm not flexible. And I'm male. And so all of these things were not, you know, in the community that I'm at, you go into a yoga studio and there's a lot of younger women who are hypermobile. And so I get into my very first yoga class. I went, a friend convinced me to go, and reluctantly I went, and I got into pigeon on the right side, towards the end of class. And all of a sudden I found that I'm tearing up. Not just tearing up, I was crying.
Yeah.
And then we get down to the, final resting pose. We're in Savasana, and, it happened to be a male yoga teacher, and Ross had a really beautiful and, soothing voice. And I felt a sense of, relaxation and relief in my body that I really had never experienced before. My body unwinding, and the same thing happened. I think it was, I don't want to say tears of joy, but tears of relief. Mm-hmm. Because for 40 years of being, angry, alcoholic, my life, relationships were problematic. I fought with partners and, generally just a kind of an unpleasant person, really, when I think back on it, and, then to get into that yoga class and feel that sense of relief, I was hooked.
It was cathartic, right? It was
just right away. And within months I noticed, I was leaving the studio one time, and driving down the road, and, somebody ran a stop sign in front of me, and I gunned it, and I started chasing them down, and I'm pounding on my dashboard and cursing at them. And all of a sudden I could see myself in this moment, and I could see the rage. I was enraged, and it hit me, the contrast between the peace that I had just come out of, coming out of the studio and feeling great, and then to be in this state of rage. And in seeing myself in that moment, it's just like something flipped, a switch flipped for me. And I pulled over to the side of the road and I laughed hysterically, which this is trauma leaving the body.
Yeah.
And so, from that moment forward, I don't think I've been enraged. I get angry. Everybody gets angry. But to flip your lid in the way that was commonplace for me in my life prior to that, it was just such an incredible experience. And this is one of the things that I've noticed a lot with the guys in my programs. Just it happens, in a matter of months that, they'll come and tell me, "Man, things just don't bother me the way they used to." And what's going on with that? And I said, "Well, does it feel good?" "Yeah." "Well, keep going."
Yeah.
And, and there was another layer for me, because of the medical trauma that I'd had. I was in therapy, and I would go to therapy, talk therapy, and I would talk about what happened. I had broken a femur, and there were complications that led to me forming gangrene. Oof. On my feet, and I lost part of my feet, and I was locked in this position at age 4 in this cast with no one around me helping. And they were saying, "Of course he's uncomfortable." Well, I would go and I would tell this story in therapy, and I had developed a mantra, which is, "God doesn't love me." And this is what was playing in my subconscious, and I wasn't even really aware of it. But I would go into therapy and I would talk about this every other session, and it was just me sitting on the couch recounting the same old shit and crying about it. And then I got to yoga, and of course all of these changes start happening. It makes sense to me why it was pigeon on the right leg, because this is where this was held in my body. I got hooked, and I started a yoga therapy training very shortly after my yoga teacher training. And in that yoga therapy training, we were doing a position where the practitioner pulls traction on the leg. And as I was receiving this, I noticed that I was lifting my hip up. And that seemed odd to me in the moment. And so I just relaxed that holding, that lifting, and I let my hips settle back down. And all of a sudden, the memory was there. It was as though I were experiencing what had happened to me in the hospital bed at age four for the very first time.
Yeah.
And I had the experience of being in that heavy plaster cast. It's 1975, right? So it was a heavy plaster cast, and to have literally a part of my body dying and not being able to do anything about it, which is, this is, you know, classic, you know, components of trauma. And that holding was there in my body all through my adult life, along with the mantra that had come along with that. And of course, I come out of that position in the yoga therapy practice training and just like sobbed for 15, 20 minutes. But from that moment forward, I can tell that story. Literally from that moment forward, I could tell that story without the emotional component to it. It was something that had happened to me in the past, and it wasn't something that was ongoing. And this is the, for me, you know, the gift that I got in the lesson that the body really does keep the score.
Totally.
As the book title says, right?
Totally.
And that if we are not working with the body, especially when we're talking about trauma, then we're often just retreading a pathway that's well-worn.
It's really kind of, it's hard to believe for folks who haven't, I think, worked through some of the trauma in their body through a physical practice like yoga. But, you know, it really is on a more subtle level, similar to somebody taking a psychedelic trip and sort of transcending their sense of self and having some perception into what they've been sort of burying and trying not to bring to the surface. Like, there is something to this where when you do release something in your back or your hip or your pelvis, it's not just a cathartic kind of release of just that feels so good. There's like some memory bank that it touches on, and it brings back either very vivid memories or sort of an embodied somatic feeling that you just kind of know this is what that's referring to. And, as you've sort of suggested, like, it's a complex emotional experience. It's not just totally tears of joy. It's also not tears of grief, but it's probably just this, this kind of a transformation through everything that you're feeling and aware of and you know of. And once you get through that, then it becomes very empowering to know that, like, this is the spot, this is the place where my trauma is most deep. And then through a yoga practice, you can slowly start weaving in some more agency and strength and control in those places, which feels totally empowering.
Yeah. And this is something that is, my experience, I don't think was ideal in terms of like a treatment perspective, because it was too quick. And, I had the resources that, I have this experience in my first yoga class, and I'm able to go and sign up for unlimited yoga and then get into a teacher training and then a yoga therapy program. But if somebody is going to have that kind of release in a different context, like, I wouldn't want one of my guys in my programs to have a situation where they're overwhelmed with emotion and left tearful. Because this is too much and I'm going to be out of there, and they're not going to see me again for at least a week. Hopefully class the next week doesn't get canceled, you know? So we really want to go slow. And this is one of the things that I think, is important when we're doing this. And there are certain practices like, breath work or, trauma release exercises, tree, that attempt to do, the same kind of, release in a very quick way. And it's not necessarily, especially in the context that we're working with, the ideal situation, because you can leave people pretty unresourced. And I think that's one of the beautiful things. And I think for me, it was really acutely held, it was in my hip. I think if you've experienced, you know, say growing up in a neighborhood where there is a lot of violence, then you're probably holding that in your body in a more generalized kind of way. And so by going very slowly and allowing you to find that edge, I love that you brought that term in, to find that edge of sensation and to be able to, you know, relax from that position rather than try and like aggressively stretch it out.
Yeah.
You know, but to release that tension that you're holding in your body bit by bit by bit by bit. You start to reformulate slowly. Rewire your nervous system bit by bit in a way that I think is sustainable and manageable and not overwhelming.
Yep, absolutely. So, Bill, we're already in extra minutes. This has been great. I honestly, we could totally could go for another hour, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I want to close this up by asking you just to kind of speak to the types of training programs you guys offer. Like, I understand the beginning, James was really out there as a one-man show with a yoga mat, bringing this to prisons and jails. But your organization, you guys offer training programs. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, we have a variety of training programs, actually. We have the core of it is our foundational training program, which is mixed online and virtual workshops, 24 hours of online content. And 5 2-hour long workshops. We cover really the landscape of incarceration, understanding, you know, the nature of the criminal justice system. And then we get into the impacts of trauma and using yoga as a means of addressing the symptoms of trauma. And we also talk about that aspect of personal development that really allows people to do this kind of work. You know, how do you go into a space, you know, without the attachment to the outcome in a way that really is supportive for a therapeutic process to take place. So that's our foundational training. We offer a 200-hour yoga teacher training that is trauma-focused and intended to prepare people to offer yoga in spaces outside of a yoga studio. We have a training for working with youth and really understanding the differences that adolescent bodies and brains are going through, so that you can really work effectively with youth, you know, to understand, you know, what's normal and what's not normal about that process of becoming an adult. We offer webinars and workshops on a regular basis. We've got a YouTube channel and a podcast. If you search for Prison Yoga Project, wherever you get your media, you're going to find that. But our community website allows people to sign up and attend the webinars live so that they get a chance to ask questions. And we bring a huge variety of guests in for that. And I want to add one thing too. You know, our primary focus started with working with incarcerated people, but recently we've really realized the impact that working in that environment has on staff. You know, a typical correctional officer loses 12 to 18 years off their natural lifespan because of the stress of working that in that environment. So we're leaning more and more into working with everybody who's impacted and working with staff as a way of trying to change, you know, change the whole approach. And the system, especially here in California, is moving in that direction in a really big way. So this really is, it's for everybody. And I think that even if somebody isn't interested in teaching inside a prison or a jail, that this is a really great training because it can open your eyes to the ways in which power dynamics can create harm. And you start to see things very clearly when you're looking at a situation where that's so explicit, like in prisons and jails. And then you start to turn around and you look back at society and you can see things a little more clearly in the way some of those dynamics work in the outside world. It was life-changing for me. So I hope we're continuing that for everybody to come.
That's great. That's great. So Bill, it's great to connect finally. thanks for joining us. I think we talked about having some follow-up conversations with your organization as well. So more to come on that for those who are listening. And thank you for what you guys do. I think it's such a super cool and much needed. And as you say, a mission that's serving just not only those incarcerated people, but also a lot of people in general who struggle with trauma for various reasons that that they carry with them. So, thank you. Great to meet. And we'll post a lot of this information on with the episode as far as how to connect with you guys, how to find you guys. But thanks again and have a great week.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
Well, that was a great conversation with Bill. You know what? I can really tell how much he enjoys what he does and also believes in the practice of yoga as a way to help his own path, but also the impact it's made in so many other lives and the people that they touch in their community. So, two things I want to share. One, if you want to learn more about Prison Yoga Project, you can go to their website, prisonyoga.org. You could also find them on Instagram, YouTube, anywhere, most major platforms where you consume media online, they are there. So check them out and follow them. Two, also, we're going to have a couple more conversations with these guys, a sort of a mini series around the Prison Yoga Project. So stay tuned and come back for more. And the third thing is, if you haven't started already, roll out your yoga mat and start your practice. You're really missing out. If you're somebody who is not quite at midlife feeling all the slings and arrows of the last 30 or 40 or 50 years, don't wait till you get there. Roll out your mat and start your practice. There's lots of different ways to get into it. And thank you again for checking us out.